So it's a pleasure to kick off the next 6 months of studying Ideas of Power by Ernest Holmes. And this is one of the three Holmes Papers books. And we spent the last 6 months doing Anatomy of Healing Prayer. And that book and this one are my two favorite of Ernest Holmes' books. And in this book, it starts out with them making the request, to Ernest to talk about how he discovered religious science or science of mind. And he said, "I did not discover the principle of religious science. I was just the first person who didn't think he had to be original. The truth does not belong to anyone. It doesn't matter who discovered it or what he believed or when." He said, "Find that thing that Lowell called the thread of the all-sustaining beauty that runs through all and all doth unite. This has been my endeavor for 50 years." And so he studied all the religions he could find. And he said he had the privilege of coming from a home with a very large family in Maine that did not believe that God should be feared, but rather that God was love, and that he could explore love everywhere he went and find God as love everywhere he looked. And so he did. And he ended up in Boston from Maine, where he studied public speaking, and he went to the Christian Science Church. Mm-hmm. And so he had a profound basis in Christian Science, but he was uncomfortable with the fact that it was a closed system. And Mary Baker Eddy was the answer, and what she said was the truth. And he didn't believe that. So he continued to look beyond that, eventually went to California, and he wrote Creative Mind in 1918 or so. He published the first Science of Mind textbook in 1929. The one that we use now is from 1938. And then this book, Ideas of Power, was written, was actually taken from talks he gave in 1959, right before he died in 1960. So this is sort of the culmination of his thinking. And the point of this chapter about science of mind that he makes is, he says, there is a law. The discovery of this law, this common denominator on the one hand, and the realization of that divine and common presence on the other, are the two cornerstones of our whole edifice. And when you understand them and coordinate them one with the other and know what you're doing, you're a practitioner, whether it's professional or not. And I would that each of you in this vast and wonderful audience would make up his mind that no year shall pass again until he knows it. Let me tell you, there is a secret to life, and we have discovered it. There is a sweetness and a song and a joy that the light of heaven shall cast its glow on the pathway of our own experience. I just love it when Ernest waxes poetic, as he often does. And so he's talking about two things, a law and a presence. He has a book called Love and Law. And they asked him at the end of his life if he would change anything about the way he had presented science of mind to the world. And he said, "I'd spend more time talking about the love and less about the law." But both are important. Here at the end of his life, he's saying, there is this law and there is this presence, this love. And both are the cornerstones of our philosophy. And practicing both is what works. He went on to say, in the Science of Mind textbook, he said, "The world of multiplicity does not contradict the world of unity, for the many live in the one. The concept of unity is the mystical secret of the ages and the key to spiritual wisdom. And he said, for a realization of the presence of God is the secret power of our work. Realizing the presence of God, that's what we're here to do. For the presence is a constant, and our awareness of the presence is what changes. And we get to choose. I often say that in my prayers. I think I did this morning. So Ernest, again in The Science of Mind, said, we know that the background of human thought is, to a great extent, one of negation, a denial of a harmonious and spiritual universe. Consequently, our outlook on life must be transformed by a renewal of our mind. If we believe it's negative, it's going to be negative, because the law brings back to us what we put out. So we have to change. And then he went on to say, and even when the results are not immediately forthcoming, we must still maintain a calm serenity of thought. Such a helpful reminder right now. We must relight the torch of our imagination by fire caught from heaven. We are going back to the source. We're not looking out here. We're looking in here. And he said, we must remain faithful to this vision. For this vision, realization of the presence of God is the secret power of our work. The only secret is the persistent ability to use the law, and the determination to continue to use it until we prove it. So that's the secret, the great secret of life, that is the title of this chapter. It's finding that source of heaven within us, and then using the law with the ideas that come from that place to create and recognize heaven on earth. My guidance has often said, you are not here to create something you are not. You are here to recognize what you already are. We are already that. So the second idea in this chapter is that the answer is within us. And the way Holmes said it in this chapter is, have no particular reverence for anything other than your own soul and the God that inhabits it. Treat the rest rather lightly, but not profanely, but with flexibility. Remember that life is a comedy for him who thinks, and a tragedy for him who only feels. But the power is to combine the feeling and the thought, to think about our thoughts, to think about our feelings, and to feel our thoughts, because we get guidance from the feeling we get when we think. Abraham Hicks teaches that that's our internal guidance system, that as we think, we have a feeling in response to the thought, and we can tell if that response to the thought is in harmony with the response of source or inner being to that thought. If we feel bad, source doesn't agree with what we're thinking. And there's another way to look at whatever we're looking at from a broader perspective. So, life is an adventure, and it doesn't come with an instruction manual. We get to make it out as we go along. And the answers are inside us. So we stay open at the top. We don't assume that all the wisdom is already given somewhere else. We look for it everywhere we find it and incorporate it into our cosmology. Because when we get a better idea, it makes sense to delete the previous programming and follow through with something that's wisdom. And we don't have to buy anything that doesn't resonate with us. That was such a huge idea. My first Science of Mind minister said, no one can tell you what's true for you but you. And that was so powerful for me, because I'd been having people tell me what was true for me my whole life. And a lot of it didn't resonate with me. I dropped out of my religion when I was 15 years old. And I was an atheist agnostic for 20 years. And then somebody took me to a study group that was studying Louise Hay. And Louise Hay was a Science of Mind practitioner. And when she wrote her books, she wrote from a science of mind perspective. So all of a sudden, I was introduced to science of mind, and it spoke to me. I understood it. It made sense. Mm-hmm. And I was clear that this was a philosophy that I could use and change my life using it. And I did, and I have. So I looked at what other people said about the secret of life. And Somerset Maugham in Of Human Bondage said, "The secret to life is meaningless unless you discover it yourself." So we are back to finding that truth within us, finding that essence of love within us. And so we return to that idea about finding the secret of life. It's inside, it's not outside. But as we gather ideas from outside, we can see if it resonates with what is inside and move forward. One thing that always occurs to me is to look about a subject on Google, because I always find cool things on the vast mind of humanity that is searched on the internet. And Paul Coelho, when he wrote The Alchemist, said, "When we first begin fighting for our dreams, we have no experience and make many mistakes. The secret of life, though, is to fall 7 times and get up 8 times. And I'm taking a class on teaching mindfulness meditation. And my teacher said, "You will forget 1,000 times, but what matters is to remember 1,001. So it just is the opportunity we have in every moment to choose another thought, to choose a different thought, to refocus. And Norman Vincent Peale said, "The secret of life is not in what happens to you, it's what you do with it." Mm-hmm. So what are we going to do with what happens? Well, for me, it's refocus and see what I can think. And so Ernest said in Science of Mind, "Perfect trust in God within is the secret of relaxation, rest, and renewal." Perfect trust in God within. And so as we trust, I pray using the Science of Mind formula, God is, I am that, therefore life works, thanks, so and so it is, over and out. That's the short version. That's the kids' version. And that, when I get to the last segment, which is called release, I usually say I relax in trust. Because trust, I relax and trust, it's a verb. I relax in trust, it becomes a state of being. So we just find that place within us that has the knowing, has the belief, has the trust that God is present right here and right now. And there's our beautiful friend Gail, and we're so glad she's here. So I always meditate on the talks that I'm going to give, and what came to me in my meditation the other morning was this statement. Not only is God on the field, God is the field, and the ball and the players, the goalpost and the cheerleaders. God is even all the enthusiastic fans and the pesky officials. In fact, we are God playing the game of God in a world of God, but most of us are playing blindfolded to the truth and unaware of the rules of the game. And so to me, Science of Mind is showing us the truth, giving us the vision, and teaching us the rules of the game. Because it's so much easier to play if you know the rules of the game. I have a cat. She's a rescue Bengal. She is the most beautiful cat I've ever seen. She's gorgeous. And she makes up new games every day. And I don't know the rule of the game. So I have to figure out what to do with the ball or the string or the feather or the treat to play the game in the proper way for this day, I move the boxes around. My house is full of empty boxes because my cat loves to jump and crawl under and explore boxes. So I'm always trying to learn the rules of the game. But it's so awesome that Science of Mind taught us some of the rules of the game, so it's easier to play the game. And one of the things I came up with for myself is I trust that my inner being always takes me by the shortest route from where I am to where I most want to be. But the shortest route doesn't always go through the nicest neighborhood. Yeah. And sometimes the days look like a not nice neighborhood. And we have to figure out what to do with that. How do we deal with that? Ernest in the Science of Mind textbook said, many things may happen that appear to be destructive. We may pass through good fortune and bad, but if we can come to the point where we're not disturbed by things, we have found the secret. Judge not according to appearances, but judge righteous judgment, as Jesus said. If we can judge in this manner, out of any chaos, we can produce harmony. So that's what Abraham says, is don't look at the conditions, be unconditional in your love. And one of my favorite quotes they said is, if you have to change the condition in order to be happy, you're screwed. And so we can't always change the condition, but we can change our awareness in response to it. And the line that helps me the most, that I share most often of anything I say, is even when it looks like something going wrong, it's actually something going right from a broader perspective. And when we start to trust that, okay, it looks like things are going very, very wrong right here, right now, but there is some way in which there is a rightness that's coming out of this. Abraham recently said that our inner beings take us through the contrast, that our path of least resistance is often through the contrast because it brings so much greater clarity. And that's what they've said about our political situation as well as our personal lives. That what's coming is so much better and greater because of the contrast of this now moment. But we have to trust it. Ernest also said in the Science of Mind textbook, the secret of prayer and its power in the outward life depends upon an unconditional faith in and reliance upon this inner presence. We are to shut out all else and enter the presence of spirit in quietness and confidence, believing. So we breathe and we relax and we remember that God's on the field. God is the field. And everything we need is right here. Everything we need is right here. One of the chapters of my book is called Everything is All Right Here. And you can emphasize every different word of that sentence and it means something different. Everything is all right here, chatting with the beloved. The essence of life is the belief in God. And that's the secret to me, is to find that presence within so that we can commune with it, so we can hear the answers to the questions that we pose, so we can be inspired to the actions that will make a difference, so that we can be uplifted, so that we can be happy, so that we can share joy and allow other people to be uplifted in our presence. Oprah says, I want to light up every room I walk into. And I have that same intention. I want to be an uplifter. I want to share life, light everywhere I go. And I want to have that impact on people that they feel better after they talk to me than before. So I make the intention of having something to offer that's valuable, that's uplifting, And I look at my life and I find stories in my life and I look for people who are willing to listen to the happy stories. I call people on the phone and say, I have a story, will you listen? And if, you know, many people say, yes, I want to hear what's going on, because they know if I'm eager to share a story, it's a happy story. It's a life is good story. It's a there's reasons to be delighted in this day story. And so as I was working on this chapter, I thought, what is the secret of life? You know, how do I know the secret of life? What secret of life do I know? And I've been taking this class on mindfulness meditation, and I was noticing that just being aware of the fact that I had toes on my foot and how they felt wasn't good enough, because truly I could feel that those toes wanted to wiggle and I was supposed to keep them still. That wasn't following my guidance. That was awareness, but it wasn't responsiveness. And so I thought, okay, I'm working on this. And then one of the assignments they gave us was to look at what in the day we took pleasure in. And I thought, okay, it's not enough just to notice what is. It's the opportunity to take pleasure in what's happening in this moment. That's what brings me into the present moment. And I remembered I had a beautiful cat named Dusty in the past, who I adored. And she used to jump up on the counter in my bathroom, and she wanted to be petted when I got out of the shower. There was something about being petted when I was wet that she really liked. So this particular day, I was petting her absently, and I suddenly got the inspiration to touch with tenderness. And I began to stroke her with tenderness. And I realized that what that did was two things. One, it brought me into the present moment, because I was not absent from her any longer. And the other was that I was able to take pleasure in the beauty and softness of her fur and the sweetness of the sound of her purring and the joy that we shared when we connected. Because I can do most anything mindlessly. I can drive mindlessly. I can make food mindlessly. I can eat mindlessly. But to bring the mindfulness in is to bring in the presence of God, to bring in the love and the tenderness and the truth. Because when we are truly present, we are present with the presence. And it's a beautiful thing to be present with the presence and bring that presence to others. And years ago I was in meditation, and what I heard was, you believe you have this connection to Source. You perceive it as a vertical connection. It isn't. Source is everywhere. But you perceive it as a vertical connection. But the truth is that once you've made that vertical connection, you've brought that essence into the consciousness of humanity. And then you have the capacity to share that heart-to-heart with another person at the vibration of humanity, not at the higher vibration of Source. Because when we come into these bodies, we take on a little denser vibration than we have when we're non-physical. But as we use that capacity that we have to feel the presence, to live the presence, to express the presence through us, we have the ability to pass it on. And it's like those wonderful circles that come out when you drop a pebble in water. It goes out and out and out and out. So what we share gets shared, and what that person shares gets shared. And I've seen it as a vision that I take my light and I share it with somebody else, and that light goes on, and then those lights go on, and the lights go on all over the world. Have you seen those pictures of the world where all the light is visible? And that is such a profound opportunity that we have as we simply practice the presence and then use the law because we can't help it. Everybody's using the law all the time, consciously or not, because what you give out returns to you. And so practicing the presence, to me, becomes the essence of science of mind, because that's the part we have control over. We can find that space. We can share that love. We can be that love. And we can change the world. It's that simple. Makes me cry. Thank you.